start out this episode of Shoot Your Shot, season 3, episode 9, by discussing the injuries across the league. There has been a lot of injuries across the last week. Some notable ones include Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson got injured in the first minute of tonight's game. Devin Booker has been out since last game. Hartenstein almost didn't come back, but he had a bloody eye that he had to continue the game with. The New York Knicks are also kind of looking like the Memphis Grizzlies. They sort of have a hospital going on in the background, not much of a basketball team. All of their top players are out, and Jalen Brunson, OG Anunoby, and Julius Randle, who was an all-star this year for some reason. So it's worth noting that there's a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Adversity in today's league, because players are going pedal to the metal with their what, 20 games left almost. So you're seeing everyone kind of fight for the standings, as we're gonna get into later this episode. We're gonna discuss, oh shit, is my internet funky again?
You're okay. It's a little
I
slow,
am.
but we can work with
Okay.
it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting the red bars. Should I like move my laptop? But then like I don't have my setup.
Nah, let's just go for it.
Okay. Should I start over? I feel like I should start over. All right, yeah, let's start over. Okay, so season 3, episode 9 of Shoot
You
Your
can. We
Shot.
got through like the injuries.
Yeah, oh my God, dude, my internet's not like, I'm hearing you like 5 minutes after you talk. What? Should I use
Yeah,
my
you're
data?
saying to.
All right, wait. I'm gonna do something because this is not sustainable. Fucking episode.
Yeah, I see the rep.
It's bad. It's so dark here, goddamn.
Behind the living room. Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, I think this is better, right?
Yeah, you're a lot clearer now.
I just like kill this. Maybe that might help. Yeah, I think this stream was eating up a lot of the Wi-Fi. Okay. Love the technical difficulties.
Oh, yeah.
All right, cool.
Everyone's favorites.
All right, yeah, that was an iffy start to the episode regardless, so I can just like redo it. Right, I'm not seeing any bars coming up. You can hear me
Hey,
fine,
you're.
right?
Yeah.
All right,
Likewise with
cool.
you.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect.
We can start. Okay, so what a better way to start season 3, episode 9 of Shoot Your Shot than discussing all the adversity in today's league regarding injuries for players, especially for teams going for that last little play-in spot, wanting to maintain their top seeds. major storylines across the league that we're going to get into in today's episode. So just to start off by naming a few of the notable injuries that I just discussed, you got Donovan Mitchell, who's been injured for about a couple of games now. He's been really on and off for the past week or so. You've had Jalen Brunson as well, who literally got injured in tonight's game in the very first minute against the Cavaliers. You got Devin Booker, who was also injured last game. We can talk about how the Suns' big three has faced everything but stability across this season, and how Phoenix gave up a huge package to get Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and they're not even reaping the benefits of seeing them on the same court at the same time. And then you also have Isaiah Hartenstein, which got his eye poked out by Max Strus, but he came back into the game because you had the Knicks head coach, Tom Thibodeau, essentially only having three players on the Knicks bench because of how many injuries they've sustained over the past couple of weeks, and actually going in all the way before All-Star break. You might have forgotten that they have an All-Star in Julius Randle that hasn't seen the floor since January. And then they're like third most important player, arguably, and their best defensive player in OG Anunoby. You got Josh Hart going for triple doubles because there's nobody else on the team. So it's worth mentioning how there's been a lot of injuries in today's league, and hopefully everyone rests up and becomes better come playoff time. It makes you think of how the Boston Celtics are playing Porzingis' health really smart by allowing him to rest in back-to-backs and not playing him in games where they see themselves winning without him. What are your thoughts on those points so far?
I completely agree. Also worth mentioning that Trae Young fractured a finger, so he's out
Right.
at least until the playoffs slash play-in
Exactly.
in Atlanta. In his
Exactly.
case, really, really
Scottie Barnes is
unfortunate for
also
them.
out.
This league, yeah,
Yeah.
Porzingis didn't play in today's blowout win against Golden State. He actually didn't play the last time as well, but I tend to agree, with how everyone else performed, and how important Porzingis Porzingis will be, particularly against teams like Miami, where, last year, it was their role players that stepped up, but this year Miami so far has not had an answer for Porzingis. So resting him in games where, they can match up other guys against the Warriors bigs, for example, or another team makes a lot of sense. And for the Knicks especially, it's really unfortunate because they, in the last like 12 games, have had the worst defensive rating in the NBA, which is no surprise when you have a guy like OG Anunoby, good two-way player like Brunson going down. It's really unfortunate. Although credit to them, they continue their ownership of the Cavs with today's win, although albeit at quite a high cost. So hope everyone gets healthy soon. Same with the Suns. It's really unfortunate that we haven't gotten to see the big three play together more, and Beal, Booker, and KD.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, we get to see them healthy for the playoffs because everyone knows that that team with those big three is box office must-see TV. It's also worth mentioning that Jimmy Butler, in his first game back after the All-Star break, does not fail to make himself heard by saying that he will. There was like a huge meme that blew up online where he's essentially saying that he's going to lock in for the rest of the season. And then right after that, he gets into a fight with Naji Marshall when they were going against the Pelicans. And it's also worth mentioning that what's his face? The small dude on the Pelicans?
It was, oh, Jose Alvarado fought
Jose
Thomas
Alvarado
Bryant,
had to
and
jump to.
somewhere in that, in there, Nikola Jovic, aka Jokic's long lost brother,
Yeah.
somehow managed to get into the scuffle as well. So actually, the three of them, I read on Twitter, hosted a little watch party. So
Serious.
Bryant and Jovic, they all
That's
watched the game
hilarious.
together while they were suspended.
That's
So it's
funny.
pretty funny. It's the thing with Miami. They're a very physical team, and it's why they're always so dangerous come playoff time. I was dying of laughter, though, the fact that Jose Alvarado,
Yeah, he had to
he's
get
a
off
little
the
pest on the
ground.
court.
He literally had to hop, like do this little hop jump to be able to reach Thomas Bryant's face. And just for the listeners who don't have a lot of context, Jose Alvarado is like 5'11", 6 foot, and Thomas Bryant is 6'11". So There's a huge foot of difference in height in between them. So, Jose wanting to stand up for Najee Marshall, the rest of his Pelicans teammates, he essentially had Thomas Bryant that left his bench area, which you're not supposed to do in those situations, just provoke him. And then that led to Jose Alvarado jumping to reach his face to punch him. And yeah, that's hilarious. That all kind of dwindled after the fact that Jimmy Butler left because he didn't really retaliate as much, but Najee Marshall kind of choked him out. So, like, Jimmy Butler is not going to stand aside and just watch that, let that happen. So he had to retaliate. But those are a few interesting kind of things that have been happening across the league, alongside with Jacques Vaughn, the Nets head coach, getting fired after a 50-point loss to the guys in green, the town of the Leprechauns, the Boston Celtics, which is also worth mentioning that after today's win against the Golden State Warriors, after today's blowout win, I should say, they are the first team in NBA history to have over 50, over three 50-point wins in the same season, which is ridiculous. We've seen them have that much success over the last couple of seasons, regular season-wise, in terms of just like blowing teams out of proportion the entire season, maintaining like a top three seed across the Eastern Conference, dating back to as long as like 2017, 2018, honestly, ever since the Kyrie Irving trade, where they became competitive again, kind of finalized their rebuild by drafting Brown and Tatum. And yeah, there's just kind of been an excellent regular season team. And I think, what's your guys's head of basketball operations again? The
Brad
ex-coach?
Stevens, former
Yeah,
coach.
Stevens made a really good job in terms of kind of getting a lot more insurance to make sure that come playoff time, he has a lot of more experienced folks when it comes to that. So what I was referring to primarily was the Jrue Holiday trade, because he's the only starter slash, I think, player on the entire roster that has a championship.
That's
So
correct.
that's worth mentioning, because I think his leadership is kind of very under the radar because he's not that vocal about it. But come playoff time, when the game slows down, as we keep mentioning across various episodes, I think that that's going to play a huge part in the Boston Celtics prevailing and maybe even taking it all the way. However, there's this narrative that I've kind of been thinking about, that the fact that you guys are in the Eastern Conference isn't really a blessing. It's kind of something that is going to hinder your success come playoff time, because when it comes to the finals, you guys simply don't have that much experience when it comes to playing Western teams, because of the way the NBA schedule works. You only get to play teams in your other conference, like the cross conference teams, only twice a season. So you don't really get that much playing time with them. You don't really see how they function. And then you're kind of so caught up in your own conference trying to get to the finals in the first place. The fact that when you guys get there, as we saw in 2022, it's not the best example because that was the first time you guys got there. So you didn't really have finals experience, so to speak. But now that you guys do, I still think after you get there, you're going to face a lot of adversity, because the teams that kind of fought and clawed their way out of the Western Conference will essentially have gone through so much more to get there. And they're going to be so much more prepared in that essence of the word compared to you guys, because let's be honest, like, the first two playoff matchups for you will be a breeze in the park. They're probably going to be a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. And then the only true challenge you guys are going to face is probably the Western Con or the Eastern Conference Finals, and maybe the semifinals. It depends on which team makes it out. So I think the fact that you guys are in the Eastern Conference, in the a lot like the Eastern Conference is a lot weaker than the Western Conference, especially now, is going to end up not really helping you as much and kind of biting you in the back when it comes to the finals.
I think that's a very interesting one. So I think on one hand that is true because I mean the Celtics have played the Pacers 5 times this season, for example, whereas they've only played the Nuggets once, the Clippers twice. They haven't played Phoenix yet, I don't think. They have two matchups coming up with them in the next couple weeks. So kind of the teams, same with OKC, they've only played them 1 time and then Minneapolis twice. Or excuse me, Minnesota twice. So you're totally right, and I think they all kind of pose their own matchup issues. I think the One, again, the Celtics have to make it out of the Eastern Conference one way or another. But I would say that game against the Nuggets is probably the most representative of a potential finals matchup because it was a lot more low scoring, a lot grittier, more physical. Really came down to a battle of, the Jays versus Jokic and Murray. Obviously, Jokic and Murray were the two biggest staples in last year's championship team. One thing that could be interesting for the Celtics, and I actually think this is something that hurt them a couple of years ago, even though, you can fight through adversity and it can help, build character for the finals, if you have too many seven game series, I think that's going to also hurt you because you're going to be a lot more gassed.
And
I think
might
this
push for
happened
more
with
injuries too, right?
exactly. I think this happened to the Heat a little bit last year where, they went up 3-0 on the series, which is why they won the conference finals. But then they, inexplicably let up three games in a row, including that crazy game six. And the Celtics the year before had to play 2 7-game series largely because of, in-game mistakes, turnovers, or just poor performances from one of their stars that made it a lot harder. And you kind of saw in like game five of that series. Or excuse me, game four, where it looked like the Celtics might take a 3-1 lead, but then the Warriors, I believe that was the game they won the 21-0 run. And that was kind of the series.
Yeah.
So it, and then of course, for the Celtics, we'll see what the additions of Porzingis and Holiday can add come playoff time. I think maybe one thing that could be different this year is Joe Mazzulla has a year. In the system, I think he's been a lot better about making in-game adjustments, particularly
He's a
when
lot more
the
comfortable in
threes
his head
aren't.
coaching role, I've seen.
And I think the Celtics are also doing a better job of like figuring out other looks for the team when the threes aren't falling. Example 1A is like last week's win against Philly, where they only made like 20% of their threes, but still won.
Still on, yeah.
Doing a lot more, pick and roll action, a lot more post-ups with Porzingis. Which I would say either him or Holiday will end up being the X factor as to whether they
Yeah,
can
yeah.
kind of close the deal. And also with their absurd 11.6 net rating currently, he has one like
That's
the top
insane.
four net ratings. So, I mean, yeah, they have all the chips in their favor. It's just can they execute? And, does that lack of, maybe not experience, but lack of familiarity with some of the
Discipline.
Western Conference teams come
I
back to
think
bite
that
them?
the fact that you guys as a franchise and as like a head office got Porzingis to buy into his role of not shooting that many threes like he did in New York and on the Mavs and in Washington, he just really want he's just like a 7'3" man who likes to shoot the ball, and like he was known to essentially just juxtapose every single coach's decision to have him play more in the post because he saw himself as a good shooter, as he should, because he is. I believe he's shooting around 37, 38% on threes this season. So, from a big man, that's insane. That's really efficient. And the fact that you guys got him to buy into like posting up and kind of going through that little hook shot or that post fade shot from the elbow or the mid post area, that's huge because he didn't do it when he was playing with a generational talent alongside Luka. And Mark Cuban, as we all know, is a very, very vocal leader. So if they didn't get him to buy into that, and you guys did now, because he's a little bit more mature, kind of going into 27, 28 years old, he kind of saw that he had to kind of use those strengths that he has genetically and naturally to his advantage instead of just settling for jumpers, which makes you guys a lot more of a threat when it comes to that. But I kind
I
of want to move
completely
on
agree.
to the Western Conference to kind of talk about some of the potential teams you guys might play in the finals if you guys make it there, obviously. But it's also worth mentioning that Warriors head office owner and president of basketball operations, Joe Lacob, called the Lakers front office and Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss, and he tried to ask for LeBron James. That is insane to me because imagine LeBron, even at 40, because he's dropping 40 points at 40 years old, alongside the best shooter the game's ever seen. And with Draymond Green kind of like manning that defensive stance in the back, that would be an insane like team to just witness. I want that to happen, especially because with the whole Bronny situation going on, there's a lot of teams, especially like the Raptors, which we're going to get into a little bit later, that are eyeing him because of those very reasons. So you actually got the CEO of Clutch Sports come out and talk about how Bronny is not really interested in his draft stock. He's more interested in which team wants to draft him. And obviously, teams are going to take that into account because they want his dad to come play on a veteran's minimum. Because LeBron James went on the record and he said that it's not about the money if he's going to play with his son. So he can literally sign with a team that's fully stacked for a veteran's minimum and then essentially just break the NBA overnight and play with his kid alongside that season, essentially fulfilling his wish to share the court with his son. But also giving himself one last true chance at a championship run because he's not going to be taking over half of the team's payroll anymore, even though he can contribute like someone who would be paid that much. So that can be seen in one of his last few performances when he outscored the Clippers in the fourth quarter by himself, 19 points to the Clippers 16, and kind of spearheaded that Lakers 37 to 10 run to win it. And then the very next day on a back-to-back at 40 years old, he took the Wizards to overtime. Now, obviously, as a Lakers fan, I'm not bragging about the fact that we took the Wizards to overtime, or should I say Lizards, because they're on a 13-game losing streak as of right now. But honestly, you had AD drop 40, you had LeBron drop 31, and they still kind of needed that whole team to beat the Wizards, which is concerning, but at least we got the W because we ended up losing the next game after that. So you got the
I
Lakers
mean,
kind of seesawing in the standings
to
when
be
they're in the
fair,
10th spot.
I think the Celtics only beat them by four, and it looked like they're gonna lose a good chunk of that game. So you know what? Everyone struggles against the Wizards, but the Wizards, or excuse me, the Washington Generals at some point remember that they're in choke mode. There was a tweet from Kyle Kuzma that came up this week from like December 27th or 28th, where he was basically ragging the Pistons for their losing streak. You know,
Farmers
aged
would
like
be.
milk sitting outside in the summer sun, you know, doesn't look so great now. But I want to go back to that first performance you mentioned. So not only did LeBron outscore the Clippers with 19 fourth quarter points, so the Clippers 16 altogether, but they overall went on a 37 to 10 run, largely throughout the fourth quarter, but starting the couple minutes ago in the third quarter, in which the Clippers had a 21-point lead. Actually, the Clippers' 21-point lead was at the start of the fourth.
And
And the
it's worth mentioning
Lakers.
that was LeBron's personal biggest fourth quarter comeback over his entire career at 40 years old. Isn't that
Really?
insane?
That's crazy, especially with like all the crazy like teams and comebacks overall that LeBron's been a
Fourth
part of
quarter
most.
comeback. Like he entered the fourth quarter down by 21 and he finished the comeback. So that's the stat.
Even then, it's crazy, especially when you can Cavs team to win his first ring, or no, excuse me, his first ring as a Cavalier, his third overall ring, coming back from 3-1 against the 73-9 Golden State Warriors.
Can't
So
believe
it's
that
just
team
kind of
didn't take it all.
incredible, and I think even though your point about wanting to play with Bronny is very interesting, I also think, you know, as you mentioned, LeBron certainly can play as someone who was worth well more than the vet minimum, pretty much even as a guy you continue to build your team around. And yeah, you know, LeBron scored a lot, but like even in games where he hasn't scored, his playmaking has been a huge strength during his tenure as a Laker. So just overall, like even though I'm a Celtics fan and have trouble rooting for the Lakers, that was an epic comeback. And we always love seeing LeBron kind of play like the generational talent and future Hall of Famer we know him to be.
Okay, so moving on, we can kind of discuss how there was a lot of All-Star snubs, in my opinion, and kind of like touching briefly on the All-Star break that we had. This was one of the less engaging All-Star weekends we've had across the NBA. There was a lot of mixed reviews and critical reviews, to say the least, across many analysts and just fans in general. It was a very lackluster All-Star weekend. The All-Star game, as we continue to see, has no defense being played in it. And we'd like to see Damian Lillard pull up from half court twice and make it, but we also like a competitive game, so to speak. And you got players and analysts and various critics all over the league saying that there's this way to fix it, like make it US versus the world or whatever the case may be. But to be honest, I don't think that the All-Star game will be fixed, period, no matter what you try to impose, because players simply have too much to lose by being competitive when it doesn't really mean anything. There's people coming out and saying that Adam Silver should place a financial incentive or like make it so the conference that wins has like the finals home court advantage. Like, I think that's too much for an All-Star game. Like, you shouldn't have that many things attached to it. But at the same time, people do want to see a competitive game. But you have current players like Paul George, for example. He came out and spoke about it. And he basically said that players don't like to become super competitive in those situations because they have too much to lose from an injury standpoint. And now, with the league coming out with such a certain rule, the 65 game rule for having some of the league's most coveted awards being rewarded to those players, they have to play in a minimum of 65 games and have those killer stats across that many games. So that requires a lot more longevity and dedication from a player's perspective throughout the regular season. And you've seen a lot of players kind of like first team all NBAers and like MVPs in the past, which have stuck to like 60 to 65 games. And now that it has to be over that, players simply have too much to lose in terms of like getting injured at the All-Star game for making it competitive and then having to sit out like 3 weeks. Lose out on like 10 of the 18 games you're allowed to miss. And then your buffer all of a sudden to get like a contract incentive you have to reach or like be eligible to make like an all-NBA team like Jaylen Brown did last season to get the Supermax all of a sudden disappears. And that like buffer area becomes a lot thin. And you're walking on like thin ice across the entirety of the regular season period that you have left as a player. So it has a lot to lose from that perspective. Like, you have players coming out and saying, I don't want to risk $50 million to offer you like a slightly more competitive All-Star game because like that's generational wealth for my family. So you totally understand it from that perspective. But to go back to that, I just don't think the All-Star game will be fixed because of those reasons. There's a lot more money on the table in today's NBA than there was back in the days when it was competitive. You didn't have the 65 game rule, for example, and contracts. So like an average contract in today's NBA was like what Kobe was getting in the 20 like 15 20 2005 and 2010 seasons. Like, Kobe was getting paid around like 20 30 million, and now like 20 million is almost the average salary for a starter in the NBA, which is absolutely ridiculous. So the payroll has just dramatically and exponentially increased over the past couple of seasons, which gave rise to players caring a lot more about them sitting out and becoming injured, which ultimately leads to the All-Star game not being as competitive. However, you can touch on this. I just also want to mention before I hand it off to you, the fact that Sabonis was not an All-Star this year is one of the biggest snubs in recent All-Star history. Kind of going back to when Bradley Beal a couple of years ago led the league in freaking scoring and was not selected as an all-star. Sabonis has more triple doubles this season than Jokic and any other player in the entire NBA. He is the leader, the league leader in triple doubles, and he's also shooting an insanely efficient stat line. I believe he's like 56, 57 from the field and like 40% from three. He's also averaging like 25, 9, and like 10, and he's not an all-star, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And also, Fox is one of the only or the only player in the top 20 in scoring who has not been selected as an all-star. So I think the Kings have not been given the benefit of the doubt like they were last season. They were kind of like the up and upcoming and exciting team that everyone was rooting for and like kind of shocked everyone. And now that they kind of did that, they're just like an afterthought in today's season, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just about to say the Kings really got disrespected this year with the All-Star selections. And their offense hasn't been quite as strong as last year, but still, like they're at the very least vying for a play-in spot if they're not going to be an outright playoff team. And even if they do play in the play-in, I think they're very likely going to make the playoffs. Sabonis, as you mentioned, has more triple doubles than the guy who has a decent shot at becoming MVP for the third time. It was last year's finals MVP. And Fox has always been, really good scorer, like quite efficient, also making kind of those crazy circus shots at the end of games.
Yeah, he's clutch. He won the clutch player of the year award last year.
Excellent hustler as well, which goes to that clutch element because he has a lot of great stamina on the court too. You can see it the way he runs up and down
He's
and
fast. He's like a
just a
modern
huge
day D
asset.
Wade, basically.
It's a huge asset for
With
for
worse
the Kings.
defense.
And although their defense has been better this year compared to last year, they've definitely, their offense hasn't been quite as strong, but their defense is definitely improved from
They
last
also
year.
drafted a gem in Keegan Murray. Like, I don't think they expected him to be that good from three, like, after they drafted him. And now he's like a solidified starter slash like very good role player. So.
So yeah, it's just unfortunate that the Kings got snubbed. We've kind of talked about some All-Star picks that we liked and others that we thought were questionable, although mostly focusing on the East. The exclusion of Sabonis and even Fox are, I think the Sabonis one's particularly egregious, but I didn't think Fox should have been respected. The Beal one from a couple of years ago is just like
Well, the thing is,
inexplicable.
Sabonis has more influence on his team. You know, like if you take Fox
Yeah,
out, you're primarily
I would
losing scoring. But if you're taking
take
Sabonis out,
Sabonis
then
over Fox
you're,
for
bro,
sure.
he's leading the league in rebounding. Sabonis is literally leading the league in
No, I
rebounding.
100% would take Sabonis over Fox, but
Like,
still, I think
he,
both
the
of them
fact that
should have
he's not
gotten
an
their
all-star
flowers.
is ridiculous. He has the most triple doubles. He's leading the league in rebounding. He has like 8 assists a game. Like, what do you do?
Dude will literally take a foot to the chest to help his team.
Yeah, and he got stepped on by Draymond last season. Oh, I said he's averaging 10 rebounds. My bad. He's averaging like 15 rebounds a game. Yeah, no, Sabonis is going crazy. Like, he is an all-star. He's already like a 2 or 3-time all-star in the past, but I think he should have like stayed his course towards becoming a perennial all-star with the way he's playing. He's literally like Jokic 2.0. Like, he doesn't get as much recognition as Jokic because he's not as funny or something, but I don't know. Just put some respect on Sabonis's name, guys.
No, 100%. And I'm excited to see what Sabonis does the rest of the season. The Kings could be a very interesting team come playoff time if they do make it. Not a team I expect to make far, but with guys like Sabonis and Fox, they'll always make a series really interesting like they did last year.
From a personal fan's perspective, not an analyst's perspective, objectively speaking, I'm speaking subjectively now. I don't want the Kings to make the playoffs because I
Right,
want the
because
Mavs, the
you're
Warriors, and the
Warriors and the
Lakers to make
Lakers.
them. I don't want the Pelicans to make the playoffs. I don't want the Kings to make them because at this point, it's going to be like 3 out of those 5 teams. So kick out the Pelicans and the Kings and give me the Mavs, Warriors, and Lakers, please.
It will be very interesting because there are going to be at least a couple of at least like either good te either interesting teams or just like teams filled with vets like the Warriors or Lakers who don't make
Well,
the
I don't
playoffs.
see
That'll be
like the
crazy.
Warriors and the Lakers missing it. So who else would you kick off out of there? The
Oh
Mavs,
no.
like Luka's
Not
playing.
the Warriors play like they did today, buddy.
Yeah.
But you also you don't count out the Splash Bros.
You
I get
can't, you
it.
just can't.
It's just
Especially with Pazemski playing the way he is. He's like Klay Thompson reincarnated. When Klay was
100%.
actually good. Well, now
Vintage
he's good
Clay.
again coming off the bench, and we'll get into that after this break from your local sponsor, KitKat. KitKat sponsor
Yep.
us. Yeah,
No copyright
so
infringement intended.
don't sue us, KitKat. Yeah, so I kind of just want to start this second part of today's episode by mentioning the fact that Lowry going back to his hometown in Philly, of course, has to bleed and have 9 stitches in his forehead the very first game he plays for them, further exhibiting his toughness, bulldog mentality with his huge booty taking charges all over the place. He was going up for a rebound, and then the big man came down and elbowed him in the head or in the forehead, so it's more specifically. And the best part is he went back to the locker room, took care of it, had seven stitches put in, and came out back to finish the game, which is ridiculous. And I believe
Such
they
a
actually
badass.
won the game. So I'm really happy that he has an actual chance to kind of reinvent himself because let's be real, he was kind of rotting over there, getting paid $30 million in Miami. He was totally not worth that price tag anymore because he's 38 and he's 6 foot. So even though you're my favorite player, Kyle, you're not worth 30 million at 39, bro. We all know that you held that one championship banner, but come on, man. Now you're getting paid 2 million, which makes more sense. So you don't have as much pressure to perform that crazy every time you go out there on the floor, which makes you perform even better. So you essentially replaced your contract with Fred VanVleet because he's your prodigy and he's getting paid like $43 million a season now. So you can rest up. You made your money. You won your chip. You were the second best player on the team. Now you're a minimum player because you're almost 39 years old and you're 6 foot and you're overweight as a PG. But you're still a menace on the defensive end and you're still a vocal leader who gets insane dimes. So tribute to Kyle Lowry. He's back in Philly. Hopefully he signs a one day and retires as a Raptor. But you never know because the Raps are scouting Bronny and you might get LeBron James. So might want to come back and retire as a Raptor.
And speaking of the 76ers, boy, do they need some help on defense. Do they need, a tough-nosed guy like Lowry? Because since Joel Embiid has gone out, the 76ers have overall been a very bad team. They did get a couple of nice wins against Cleveland. They beat the Mavericks today after Tyrese Maxey had 17 first quarter points. But they've had the third worst net rating in the last 15 games, the second worst defensive rating at 120.3 point per 100 possessions, and only the 21st best offense, despite having guys like Tyrese Maxey, who can go off for 50.
Buddy Hield, Tobias Harris. That's
Tobias Harris
insane
over me.
offensive rating.
Tobias Harris over me.
Dude, if he stayed with Philly, they would have probably made the finals by now. That's ridiculous.
Many, many mistakes, and likely why the process will have to start again at some point soon for
Yeah,
Philly,
and then
but
Philly
we'll.
like didn't make that like many smart moves this offseason. They got rid of like role players like George Niang, for example, who just hits threes all the time. Like I know they paid more for Buddy Hield now, but I don't know. I feel like Tobias is also underperforming a lot when he's like that second or third option after Buddy, you know? So like there's just not been like it's crazy how one player has that much effect on a team, especially I know he's like the team's leader and everything, obviously, but like you have a second leader in Maxey who's still kind of learning the ropes, but it's just like an insane drop off. Just be
I
like,
think
obviously, he's the MVP of the league, reigning MVP, probably like a two-time MVP if he didn't get injured. But it's just insane to go from like one of the best teams in net rating to like the last team, like DFL, like almost 28th in net rating, which is ridiculous. Like,
I really do think, especially because like they always say like good defense leads to good offense. You could also
for sure.
argue, the opposite way around, especially in an offensive driven league, but at the end of the day, if you're giving up threes, or the team can just score on you with ease, as has been the case with Philly without Embiid, then that's going to pose a lot of problems for you because, at the end of the day, Embiid is the glue of that, team's defense. He's consistently been, defensive all first team pretty much every season. Obviously, he was MVP last year. And the problem is Maxey's a good scorer, but he's very much undersized. Kind of be also a defensive leader. And, until they picked up Lowry recently, they don't have a lot of other guys who have more of that defensive identity in them. So it's really been a struggle bus. And ultimately for Philly, I think just on account of the fact that like once you hit like the seventh or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, there's a huge drop off. But unless they get Embiid back, it's gonna be, tough sledding for them come playoff time.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to, oh yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, in spite of them having the groat.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, I'm happy you said that actually. But yeah, I kind of want to touch on two teams here, the Mavericks and the Cavaliers. So we can kind of stay in the Eastern Conference, talk about how Max Strus has been an insane revelation for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So this man essentially hit a 60-footer to beat the Mavs. And the Mavs were not on a winning streak because they had lost the game before. However, before they lost that game, they're on a 7-game winning streak. So they were like red hot coming out of the All-Star break. Luka's been playing like his MVP in-season form. He's in shape. He's averaging 35 points, like 9 assists and 8 rebounds a game, which is unprecedented in the NBA. So you got him playing super well, leading the charge. You got Kyrie kind of buying into his role as well. You got their trades, recent acquisitions, and Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington kind of just like carrying their weight defensively. They're a lot bigger. They have a better front line, all that into account. And then they were leading that game with like 10 points by 10 points with like 2 minutes left against the Cavs. And then Max Strus by himself goes on a 15-point run to essentially erase the lead and cap it off with a 60-footer from behind half court. It kind of reminded me of the Damian Lillard game winner, his only game winner of the season so far, when he essentially inbounded it into Lopez. Lopez gave it right back to him, and he just kind of like dribbled, pulled up, and then made it. However, Strus made it from behind half court, and there was like 2 seconds left on the clock. And we all know if Donovan Mitchell was in the game, he would have taken that shot. So that's even a better coaching decision on JB Bickerstaff, which is a very under the radar, very good candidate for a coach of the year. He took Donovan Mitchell out for defensive purposes, and he didn't have a timeout to put him back in. But the fact that he took him out allowed Max Strus to take that shot and beat the Mavericks, which have been just scorching hot as of recent. Looking at the advanced stats here, I think the Mavs are in the top for the last 15 games. They are number
Top
what?
five offensively.
Yeah.
So fifth best offense, 18th best defense, which I think has more to do with the last two games versus, that like 10 game stretch before where they were playing much better defense, particularly Luka himself, who sometimes gets criticized, for not being as strong on that end of the ball as compared to his scoring and his playmaking on the offensive side of the ball. The Maverick, it's kind of weird. I feel like the fifth through eighth seeds, actually fifth through 10 seeds of the West are so hard to figure out. It's really impossible to say who will end up where. Some days it's like the Pelicans and Suns, and then other days it's like the Kings and Mavericks.
Yeah, no, just like you said, the reason I was having trouble finding it was because of the last few games. So if you look at their stats in February, they were the sixth in net rating with a really good offensive rating and a top five defense, like you said yourself. So, or sorry, top four offense and a top 10 defense. So that's worth mentioning that they've been just insanely rolling. I think I'm one of the few thinks Luka has a better case for MVP than Shea does. I get that Shea's very consistent with it when it comes to OKC. They're the second seed, might even take the first seed in the West. And I know it's a regular season award. However, he's literally like less than Luka in every single stat. Like Luka's averaging more points, he's averaging more assists, he's averaging more rebounds, he's averaging that on better shooting splits. Like he hasn't beat individually in every single category, and it's MVP. Like it's literally an individual award. It's not a team award. I know people use like team, your team doing well as the narrative for like, oh, you're the best player on a like winning team, not on a losing team. But I don't know. Like we all know Victor Wembanyama is going to win Rookie of the Year, and his team's in like DFL in the league. So why is Luka not getting more attention when he still has the ability to finish like top five in the West? Like when we look at the Western Conference standings, like you said, every team is super jam-packed when it comes to that fifth to 10th spot. There's only like 4-game differences between all the way from the fifth to the 10th spot. So like you got teams like the Pelicans, You got teams like the three that we mentioned alongside Sacramento and the Pelicans, the Warriors, Lakers, and Mavs, which are fighting to get into that playoff spot, never mind play in. And like they're not that far apart. The only teams that are far apart are the top four. And the Clippers are kind of like that separator between them. But when it comes to all the teams from the fifth to the 10th spot, it's like anyone's game until the end. And we all know how Russ won as a sixth seed in 2017. So I think Luka's MVP case should be a lot stronger than it currently is because all the analysts and media representatives who actually have votes when it comes to that are leaning towards Jokic versus Shea because of the standings. But everyone's having that little sleeper outlook on Luka. And I think if he makes like late season push to kind of get like that top six spot in the West, then I think he might just run away with MVP. I just don't think it should be postponed like one of those things with Harden 2017, 2018, because we all know he's gonna have a better season next year, but he's literally beating the person who's on track to steal it from Jokic in every single category. So I think he should just get a lot more visibility and exposure when it comes to him kind of leading the pack when it comes to the Mavericks and like playmaking, rebounding, scoring, just setting the tone, playing on his own pace, like that herky jerky style, just like Shea, but in more efficient numbers across the entire roster. Like if you take Shea out and Luka and trade them for each other and put Luka on the OKC Thunder, they would by far be the first seed. Like give Luka a Chet Holmgren who's buying into his role, as opposed to like a Porzingis that wants more touches, just like Dwight Howard did back in the James Harden days on the Houston Rockets. And like Luka's gonna take that team probably all the way to the championship. So I'm not taking anything away from Shea. This is not a knock on Shea by all. He's Canadian. I'm Canadian. We love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's a hell of a player. He is having an MVP caliber season. However, Luka is beating him in every single stat across the board.
Yeah, I personally would say it's a two-man race between Jokic and Luka. Again, my kind of subjective personal opinion based on, what they put up on the court. And then I would say the second echelon is SGA. Maybe you could throw in a Giannis, a Kawhi. Yes, I throw Tatum in there.
You
Obviously,
should.
his
You should.
numbers
You
aren't quite as
should.
good, but 27, 9, and 5 is, on the best team. Yeah, and he even said he's willing to sacrifice the 30 points per game. Kind of like how we talked about, Porzingis buying into his role.
Yeah.
And you can say the same about Tatum. However, since it is, I would say, primarily a offensive oriented slash scoring oriented award, I do think that Luka and Jokic should be kind of the top two. It's a tough call. I mean, we could probably, as the season draws to a close, do another deep dive on, the cases for and against. Oops. Cases for and against the top contenders like a Luka, like a Jokic, maybe even throw in like an SGA or Giannis and sort of see what the cases for and against them are. I think Luka's scoring and his playmaking are sort of the best cases for him. Yeah, and he, in spite of some of the losses recently, has been averaging like 35 point triple doubles, which is just, crazy.
Ridiculous.
Had the game a couple days ago against the Celtics where he was pretty much the only reason they were in the game at all for any point. Because Kyrie Irving, who, for what it's worth, has 0-10 in his last 10 games against the Celtics and stepping on Lucky. Don't mess with Lucky, by the way. But, I think besides that, though, Kyrie has, stepped into his role. Well, and Luka's figured out how to get him involved too, despite him also being a ball dominant point guard. So I think that's also, gotta give Luka a lot of credit for that as well.
Yeah, and he's increased his pace too. He's usually known to kind of like play like Harden and the Rockets, like very slow pace. But he kind of bought into Kyrie speeding up the team's pace because Kyrie likes to run and gun it, so to speak. And Luka's kind of been following that lead, especially when they're both sharing the floor. However, when Kyrie goes to the bench, you can see Luka kind of drawing back to his tendencies a little bit more, kind of like slow pace, going on his own pace. However, when Kyrie's sharing the floor with him, you're seeing both of them kind of just running up the floor and kind of like instilling that Indiana Pacers offensive scheme, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think Luka will be kind of the determining factor of how far the Mavericks go come playoff time. They missed last year, although of course Kyrie Irving basically did not play, and they were sort of shorthanded towards the end of the season. But the year before, the Mavs obviously made it to the conference finals, which was Luka's first appearance, and really should I think instill some confidence despite how it ended. And Luka kind of knows, what it takes to get back there, and the West. I feel like MVPs, even though it's a regular season award, they get even more competitive, come or even if they don't win the award come playoff time. I think Jokic probably had a chip on his shoulder not winning the MVP last year, so he just did it in the finals instead.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Could very well be the same for Luka. So speaking of a slow pace, just one interesting stat from the Celtics game against the Knicks a couple weekends ago. They only scored 116 points in that game, but it has to have been one of the very slowest paced games of the entire season because they did that on just 84 possessions, which averages out to about 138 points per 100 possessions. That's actually the most efficient performance the Knicks have given up at Madison Square Garden in 15 years. So it's very interesting, and I think, sometimes it's good to play at a faster pace and, wear teams out, which is something I think that the Pacers do very well. However, I also think pace is a very misleading rating because, as I mentioned in the last episode, the current leader of pace in this league is the bottom feeding Washington Wizards, which is the reason for it, of course, is because they play out of control basketball and turn it over half the time. Maybe not half the time, but when they played the Nuggets a week ago, their first four possessions of the third quarter were all them giving it to the Nuggets. So I think being able to play, strong defense and kind of get the buckets you need to seal the win, with that slower pace is very important come playoff time. I also will say for the Knicks, them not having guys like OG Anunoby, you really feel it in games like that where the pace slows down. Especially because OG Anunoby last year's steals leader, can really catch guys off guard. So hopefully, I think the Knicks need him back, and they just need that team healthy because if they are, they're one of the better defensive teams in the league, especially with Tom Thibodeau as the coach, and I think they're one of the more balanced teams as well. And given the injuries in the East, could make the conference finals if healthy. So just wanted to throw that one out there.
Yeah, no, we definitely discussed even like offline how pace is very subjective when it comes to teams. You got teams with like really good pace, not winning. You got teams with slow pace winning and the opposite. So it's very kind of like dependent on how the team uses it to their advantage. Sometimes when players slow down the game, they can kind of like weave through your defense in a lot more efficient way and just kind of like use that to their advantage. And other times they can kind of use the speed factor to kind of catch you off guard and score on you. So really depends on like how your superstar player likes to play. Like obviously you're going to find teams like LeBron play a lot slower because of his age and because of his play style in general. And like you're going to have teams like Steph just kind of like running. I think he covers like 3 miles a game every game. So like it's just you're gonna have teams that kind of like run and gun, like OKC for example, like they like to get stops and then you can see like half of their players onto the front court as soon as the stop is in one of the players' hands. So they just like to run up the floor and down. And it's worth mentioning that also OKC is like the youngest team that's doing this well right now. Usually you have teams that are kind of like a little bit older and like put together because of superstar experiences like the Lakers, for example. Or you have teams that kind of just like have had their stars for a while, like the Warriors. You have teams like the Nuggets who kind of like drafted all of their players and kind of like built them up towards to where the spot that they are right now. And then you have other teams that kind of like go out and get those players. So it really depends on how your team enjoys to play and how they are finding success to play.
Yeah, and like obviously it's very player dependent, like we mentioned. So it's very kind of like toss, it's a toss up. It really depends. But yeah, like obviously the playoffs are right around the corner, so they're less than 6 weeks out at this point, which is insane. You can kind of just see which teams are going on runs. Like the Cavs are basically like what, like I think they've won like 9 out of the last 13 games or something like that. It's been ridiculous.
And before that they had like a 16-2 run. Even the last 15 games where they've had a couple of bad losses to Philly, not bad losses, but just like 1-2 possession losses where they should have won. Even then they have, checking the advanced stats, they have
In February, they had the 8th best offense and the 6th best defense,
defense. For
and they were,
seven best net rating, probably
yeah.
in like the last 25, they're top five, in all three categories. They currently have the third ranked defense overall on the
Yeah, they're
season,
definitely like
so.
a sleeper team in my opinion, because like Donovan Mitchell is really sick of losing in the playoffs. Goes back to his days in Utah. Like he came out and spoke about how he's just like super like mortified of just losing. He's just not like about that life anymore, essentially, for lack of a better phrase. And his teammates have kind of bought into that, right? Because like someone can argue that they're not on his timeline because he's a little bit older. I think he's like 25, 26, and like all of his teammates are in like the 20 to like 23 age range. So like you got like his second all-star teammate Darius Garland, who's like a couple of years younger than him. And in the NBA, that's quite a lot, you know. So like a couple of years in the NBA, it's kind of like what, like a sixth of your career. So yeah, like it's just tough because like you can argue that like players like Evan Mobley or Darius Garland have a little bit more time to lose before they kind of like start competing on a high level. However, Donovan Mitchell has had that time already happen to him in Utah. So he's publicly came out and spoken about how he's done with losing. He's just not trying to lose anymore. Kind of reminds me of the whole Victor Wembanyama narrative, which we should end the episode with. But going back to get the Donovan Mitchell story, it's just tough to see him like keep getting bounced out of the first and second round. Like he's never even made the conference finals, and he's way too good of a player to not go that far. So I think that the Cavs are like a very like sleeper team might be a hard word to use because they're the second team in the East right now, but I feel like a lot of people are counting them out just like they are with like the Minnesota Timberwolves or the OKC Thunder, for example, in the West. And like you can say that you like I'm okay with people saying that in the West because that group in Minnesota that was assembled that like they traded what like 5 first-round picks for Rudy Gobert. They've never played in the playoffs together. They did last season, but they weren't the team that they were now. Actually, they were because what's his name already got traded to LA by then. So they do have a fair amount of playoff experience. So actually, I'm not okay with people saying that about the Minnesota Timberwolves. But when you say that about the OKC Thunder, that's the team who has literally have zero playoff belt. Playoff level games of experience under their belt. So like people counting them out in the playoffs is very understandable because they simply haven't been there before. They don't know what to expect. It's not the same as the regular season. I can guarantee you that, especially when you're playing a team like the Warriors or the Lakers in the first round, because that's the team that's probably going to get the 7th seed at this point, one of those two. Or even the Mavs. Like the Mavs would probably go to 7 games. But like I don't even see the Warriors and the Lakers taking them to 7. I just see them shutting it out in like 5 or 6 games because they're simply like going to control the pace a lot more and they're going to be a lot more locked in defensively, and the Thunder won't get as many stops because they're going to be playing the same team over and over and over again. Like it's different playing a different team every day where you're kind of like getting ready for a new challenge and everything. Once you figure out like the player's tendencies, like after the second, third game in the playoffs, you're going to shut those tendencies down, especially from players as smart as Steph, LeBron, Draymond Green. Like you think Draymond's not going to guard you well enough to stop you in the playoffs, bro? Like, come on. That's just reckless at this point. He might not guard you well enough, but he'll knock you out and take you to the hospital instead. Like, you know, like don't count teams like that out in the playoffs. Minnesota, they have like 1 year's worth of experience from a playoff run. So, like, that's fine. But, like, the Cavs, they have more than that. They have 2 years worth of experience of playoff failures. So, I just don't see them failing a third time. And failing to them is essentially getting bounced out in the first 2 rounds. So I see the Cavs potentially being that sleeper team that makes it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe it's like literally a toss-up between three teams in the East, and the Cavs are the third team. We all know the first two are the Celtics and the beloved Miami Heat, which turn it up in the playoffs, and Jimmy kind of just grows a new ball sack. However, going into that third team, a lot of people are dubbing the Knicks to be that third team. However, with all of the injuries, I just don't see that happening unless players start coming back like this week, which is not the timetable for most of their players, including Brunson, OG, and Julius. So they definitely did something good. They have a lot of first round picks. I think they're going to have a massive offseason in terms of the Knicks, and they're going to come back gunning, and they're probably going to make the Eastern Conference Finals next year. You heard it here first, Sunday, March 3, 2024. The Knicks are making the 2026 Eastern Conference Finals or 2025
Okay.
Eastern Conference Finals. But
Yeah,
yeah, I think the Cavs are that third sleeper team in the East.
it's really interesting because I feel like the Cavs and the Timberwolves have kind of the same problem insofar as like they both can score on offense, but it's definitely their weak point. I think the Cavs are like middle of the pack, like 15th on the season offense. Defensive rating and the Timberwolves like 18th or 19th. And even though the pace of the game slows down in the playoffs and it definitely becomes a bit more defensive oriented, you need to be able to score. And the Timberwolves, as we talked about 2 episodes ago, have definitely had issues in the clutch, particularly, their top two scorers in Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns. However, other teams in, for example, the West have their own challenges, such as OKC, barely being legal as a whole to drink at a bar in the US. So that lack of ex playoff experience at youth, could be an asset for them because they're all like, young, full of energy, could really tire out kind of more aged teams like the Clippers or a team like that, or even the Timberwolves, Rudy Gobert's a little bit
He's
on the older
39,
side.
man.
As for the Cavs, first of all, worth mentioning, Donovan Mitchell's actually 27. He'll turn 28 in September,
There you go.
which is weird to think about when he was in the same draft class as 19-year-old Jason Tatum, and Ben Simmons. Oh, wait, just kidding. But I think I would also dub Cleveland as the third team currently. And
Jared
of course,
Allen and Evan Mobley are just too good of a front court. Like, Jared Allen does not get enough credit. Like, I know he used to be an all-star, so that's all good and dandy, but like, he is so under the radar when it comes to like the basic reason that they have like one of the best defensive ratings in the entire NBA, because he's like holding that paint like a prisoner. Like, he's such a good player when it comes to playmaking as well. Like, him and Evan Mobley have that big man connection. They keep throwing lobs to each other on the offensive end. They keep stuffing shot attempts on the other end of the floor. Like, Jared Allen is one of the best bigs in today's game.
yeah, and I frankly think Cleveland's defense is more than good enough to get them to the conference finals. It's the same issue as last year, which is when they play another team that's also good defensively, what can they do to score? That's the main reason why they got bounced by the Knicks in 5 games last year, in my opinion. They just really couldn't figure out how to get the offense going, even though the defense did do their part against the Knicks. Given all the injuries to the Knicks, particularly guys who contribute on the defensive end, like your boy OG Anunoby, I think that's a huge ding against the Knicks. And of course, the Milwaukee Bucks, you don't really know what's going to happen with them. They're probably also a team worth talking about, but I would honestly put them an echelon below the Cavs simply because you can't trust Doc Rivers in the playoffs. Sorry, 07, 08 Celtics. They're just too inconsistent of a team, even though their defense has improved a bit with him under center. Their offense has taken a step back, which was, of course, a strong suit. There's so really, as a Celtics fan, if there's any team that's making me poop my pants, it's still the Miami Heat. But I think a series against the Cavs would also be very entertaining and a lot closer than people think, especially with Donovan Mitchell as hungry to get up, out of a conference as he is. And he deserved it. I remember in the bubble, he put up 50 burgers, tried to keep the Jazz afloat in that series, but came down to one Mike Conley shot rimming out.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I remember Jokic and Murray, consoling him after, because he clearly was devastated, even though,
It was a good shot too. It was a
was a
really
good
good
shot,
shot.
and them losing the series was absolutely not on Donovan Mitchell. In fact, he
Yeah.
was the only reason it went to seven games, frankly.
Exactly. Yeah, so we
Should
can
have
kind of
also should have
end.
won Rookie of the Year 5 years ago, but
Who
we
did?
won't air Ben Simmons, aka the not real rookie.
Oh my
Highway
God.
robbery.
Well, speaking of
I'm
real
still not over
rookies,
that.
what an amazing way to kind of start talking about Victor Wembanyama, because I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't on the hype train until after the All-Star break. Like, this man has been playing so much better after the All-Star break. It's ridiculous. If you compare his stats before and after, it's just night and day. Like, man's being more efficient, he's playmaking more, less turnovers. But the thing I actually want to talk about is his desire to win. Like, this guy is so respectable when it comes to that, because like, he keeps getting asked questions. Like, for example, he was on like the All-Star rookie team or something in the sales competition. And he was in the first the first picks team, the number one pick team. And in the skills competition, Anthony Edwards was like, "Hey, like, I'm an All-Star, I'm having fun, I want to shoot with my left hand." And Victor Wembanyama was asked about that after the game. You could first of all, you could see his visible frustration when Anthony Edwards did that, because he wanted to win the skills competition. But the second thing was when he was asked about it after the fact that it happened, and he was like, "Hey, like, people, I know some of my teammates are out here trying to have fun, but I think winning is fun." And then you also saw that win against OKC, when the Spurs came back from their 9-game road trip, and he took the mic and he was like, "Yeah, I missed this expletive," right? They had to bleep it out. They had to tell him not to swear on national TV. But like, you can kind of see him kind of like growing into that number one pick, like, next franchise player, next superstar level caliber player, in terms of like, "Hey, like, I miss this," like, kind of talking up the fans, like, "I miss the fans. I miss playing in front of my home crowd. We've been on a road game for 9 games. We're playing against my rival in Chet Holmgren. I stuffed him for like, I stuffed him his shot attempt with a massive block in the last minutes to kind of like keep it from being a competitive game. We started pulling away. We won the game," which is kind of weird, because like, San Antonio has literally just been winning against like good teams and losing against bad teams. Like, most of their wins are against Phoenix, like, especially in the beginning. Like, I think when they had like 4 wins in the beginning, 2 of them were against Phoenix, and then now they're beating OKC. So like, they're out here making moves. I think they're gonna have a hell of an off season, which we'll talk about after we cover the finals. But like, honestly, like, this Victor Wembanyama archetype right now, like, he's just been kind of like flipping the script. He's playing a lot better than he did to start off the season, and he's leading the league in blocks, and he has like historic store stat lines already. And he was like the first player to have a 5-by-5 game in like 5 years or something, and he was the first rookie to have a 5-by-5 game ever. And for that, for those who don't know, that means he has 5 or more points in every category, including steals and blocks. So he had 5 or more points, he had 5 or more rebounds, 5 or more assists, 5 or more steals, and blocks. And like, he's just kind of breaking records like there left and right. And he's not happy with his team losing. That's the main point I'm trying to make, is that he is not entertaining losing anymore, because he wants to start winning. He might know that 7-3 and up players' history in the league isn't the longest. Exhibit A was Yao Ming with the Rockets. Like, that was one of the best what-if stories in recent memory. So like, I think he's just trying to capitalize on the time that he has, because he just turned 20 and he doesn't want to keep losing. His season stats are about 33% from three and 46 from three, but I'm going to check his stats after the All-Star break and you guys are going to see the change I'm talking about.
Yeah, and he also had a triple double where he got it with blocks recently. I think like a couple weeks ago, so between when we recorded last. Can't remember who it was against, but it was triple double with points, rebounds, and blocks.
Yeah.
Just
He's
pretty
just going
incredible.
crazy.
I think if the Spurs have one or two more good off seasons, they could become a contending team again. Kind of if they build around Wemby the way they built around Tim Duncan after they took him back in 1996, I
And
think the
David
Spurs,
Robinson.
and the Spurs, of course, have, still one of the best coaches in the league and Coach Popovich, who has multiple titles under his belt, including with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili, your boy Kawhi. San Antonio, bottom of the league team again this year, but they got their guy Wemby, and I think he's separated himself quite a bit from Chet, and he should be the rookie of the year by a comfortable margin. Maybe a couple other little tidbits to go through before we finish off season three, episode nine to Shoot Your Shot. Your Raptors had a very nice performance about a week ago with Grady Dick, aka Whose Man's, going 7 for 9 from the field, including making all four of his threes, tallying up 18 points in just 22 minutes. And what was his field goal and 3-point percentage before the All-Star break? You told me.
Ridiculous, way too bad.
Virtually not. It was like 21% from three, or was it 21% from the field? I don't remember which.
Yeah, it was in the 20s.
So he again kind of just like popped out of nowhere, but maybe the Raptors can come up with something with him. But of course, the head of the team moving forward is of course Scottie Barnes, who was an All-Star reserve this year and has been having a really, really good season, and also has had the most triple doubles. Sorry to steal your thunder as the Raptors fan squad, has had the most triple
I mean,
doubles by a
hey,
Raptor
Kyle
in a
Lowry
single
still leads
season.
that. So, but Scottie Barnes is definitely gonna beat him by the end of his career. So, I'm happy. I
And
like Scottie Barnes. He's a good player.
of course, he had that 20-point triple double performance, added 5 blocks as well in a recent Raptors win. Forgetting against who again, you might remember this off the top of your head better than I can. But the Raptors, even if they have a couple seasons of building to do, they definitely have their guy of the future in Scottie Barnes.
Yeah, it
He
was
has
the
a
steal
lot
of
of
his
room to
draft
grow.
too.
Absolutely. One other final thing, another team that's in the dumps like the Spurs, the Charlotte Hornets, who have the lowest net rating of any team. But since getting guys like Grant Williams, Seth Curry, Davis Bertans, had about the 10th best defense in February after being 30th pretty much the entire rest of the season. So just wanted to give my flowers to Grant Williams. And, I think they made very good pickups for their bench. Don't think the Hornets are going anywhere anytime soon as a team, but just wanted to
Hey, he's gonna make
congratulate
them
them for a
both,
few
though.
good trade deadline moves.
He's gonna
Oh
make them
yeah.
both.
I'm gonna make them both.
And with that, we'll end the most recent episode of Shoot Your Shot.